Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 624 for comics originally released on July 24th, 2019. Now, starting us off in DC is Batman Curse of the White Knight, book one, or number one. I don't know why they do this book thing, but whatever.
Yeah.
This is part of the DC Black label, and it's a sequel to Batman White Knight.
Yeah, which I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I found the original one to be kind of a fun and interesting retooling of the Batman mythos with kind of the conceit of, well, what if the Joker was the good guy and Batman was the bad guy?
Exactly, yeah. I found that very cool, and I like seeing different takes every now and then.
What I really enjoyed is they managed to do that, keeping the entire backstory of Batman as the crime fighter intact.
Which is hard to do, not making him the villain. He's true to the character, it's just... Yeah, some of his worst traits come forward, I would say.
Yeah. This, I mean, overall, I thought this issue was solid story and art. But man, I don't think it would have hurt me to reread Batman White Knight right before reading this.
You know what? I was thinking the same thing when I read this because I was trying to remember. I'm like, okay, I remember Mr. Napier. I remember, and I couldn't remember the ending of White Knight.
Yeah. So
were you the same way?
Yep.
And so I was like, what in the heck happened? I can't remember. So I'm like, ugh. So a little bit frustrating, but I kind of can work around it while reviewing this.
Yeah, it's funny because I didn't think this issue was particularly inaccessible, but I also found the ending of the last one, because it's been a while, a little, I don't want to say unmemorable, I couldn't remember it.
Me neither, and I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing because I really enjoyed the book, but if I can't remember the ending, maybe it wasn't that good.
Yeah, it's one of those, I remember it landing the ending decently. So I don't think it was bad, but there's a difference between good and, oh my god, it's memorable, better part of a year later.
Yeah, exactly. So I remember when we were doing our year-end reviews, I had saved that as a graphic novel to read. Mm-hmm. And I read it, and you were asking me if it changed my pick for the best comic. And I was like, it was good, but it didn't change it. So it wasn't the best comic I read, but it was pretty darn good.
Yeah. I would say it was, again, solid. Like this, it hits the notes it needs to hit. But it's not one of those that's going to, you know, at least for me, fundamentally change my perspective on these characters.
I would agree. And one thing I really like in here is something that is missing a lot in Batman today, especially with Tom King's run, is you don't get a lot of that detective stuff. And you have a little more of that here with Sean Murphy's take. So, you know, you get to see him actually doing an investigation and going in detail and trying to piece clues together, which it's true to the character, which I do like because I don't see that so much in Batman right now.
Yeah, I think the detective aspect often gets ignored, and I find that a little frustrating.
Yeah, me too, because I rarely read Batman. I was the Marvel zombie guy, but when I did read an issue here or there, I remember him being a detective, and I remember that type of stuff. So it was something when I read it, I was just like, you never see it. And it's kind of a little refreshing to have that brought forward to the foreground.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
this one was kind of interesting with bringing in John Paul Azrael and a fairly different version of the character.
I would agree. I don't know much. I haven't seen him a ton of times, but this is different than the last time I saw him.
I've read the character since the original introduction of the character off the rack, and he was, frankly, a lot scrawnier in his, you know, civilian identity or whatever, and it was the armor and the training and kind of the other stuff behind it that kind of amped him up. This is a guy who's clearly professional military.
Yeah, professional military and pretty jacked. He's huge.
And significantly older.
Yeah. So not somebody you want to meet in a dark alley for sure with the tattoos and stuff. You're like, eh, he looks like a brawler.
Let's face it. Is there anyone in Gotham you'd want to meet in a dark alley?
Probably not. Even the scrawny guy. I don't want to meet him. I don't know what kind of weapons he has.
Yeah, just don't go into the dark alleys. That's all I'm saying.
Exactly.
It's Gotham, man. Come on. Bringing that character in, I think, is an interesting choice because in the comics originally, that was definitely a turning point in one of the people to kind of take over from Batman for a while.
Okay, cool.
So I don't know what riff they're going on here, but it wouldn't surprise me if they're kind of going down that kind of a path, potentially.
Yeah. Now, I also found it very interesting in here, the beginning where we see going all the way back to the beginning of Arkham Manor, before it was Arkham Asylum and everything, and some of the stuff that's showing up there, you know, the old bones and stuff.
Yeah, I had mixed feelings on that. I'm a little over this, everything has to go back generations.
Yeah, we just reviewed a book last week where I was talking about 1685, and it was this book that I was referring to and not the one we reviewed last week.
Although that one still went back at least to the 1700s.
Yeah, so they're all riffing off each other. They're all going down that same road there.
Well, and it's not the first time. I mean, they did a miniseries a few decades back called The Kents, and that followed the Kents back of, you know, a century or two.
Yeah, so it's been done, and it gets a little bit old after a while.
And I'm okay with them going down that path if they've got something new and interesting or actually take advantage of that.
And I don't know what they're doing here. I just like the idea of, I don't want to spoil it, but the character and what they're finding wrong with it.
Yeah. Clearly they're going somewhere with it, and I don't think it was done on a whim. I think it's going to be a central part of this whole arc.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with that as long as it's got the payoff.
Yeah, I want to see something happen with it, because so many times something's thrown out there, and then it's like, well, why was that put out there? I'm hoping it's for a reason.
Now, I could see somebody doing a riff on Batman with their own original characters or whatever, and have that family have been central to the city they live in kind of the, you know, way that they knew literally not only where all the bodies were buried, but how all the houses were built, everything in construction. Just because their family has been around so long in key positions and took notes.
Exactly. That'd be really cool. So, it was Jimmy Olsen that we reviewed that went way back.
Yeah, yeah.
The last issue.
The last week. It was setting up basically Jimmy and Luthor having kind of a generations-old feud. This is setting up a similar, oh, these grudges go back, you know, generations. And I'm like, really? Do they have to?
Exactly. Between the Waynes and the Arkhams, it's like, okay. We're going all the way back.
Again, having the Arkhams go way back makes sense because, I mean, how else do you wind up with an Arkham Asylum if there's no history behind it?
Very true.
It's the intertwining of that and the Wayne family, which also should go back a ways, and the constant interweaving of their destiny and history that gets a little convenient.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. It is convenient, especially since we just saw it. So I think it's just because it happened in rapid succession with the two DC books we reviewed. It's like, okay, been there. All right, let's see. Are you guys just sitting in a room talking to each other and sharing ideas? What's going on?
Yeah. Now, what did you think when they first got to the present day and this whole bit of Napier and the Joker being two different identities in the same body, essentially?
I found that interesting, and that was what I was trying to piece together some of what had happened in the previous book, because I remembered how it played out, but not knowing the ending and not knowing how it played out exactly, it was a little bit confusing to me.
For me, it was also a matter of not remembering exactly where they left off and all that stuff, but also, that's a riff that seems very Two-Face-like.
Yeah, very Two-Face-like. So yeah, it's Two-Face mishmash with the Joker, because you have both sides of the character and one not liking the other, even though it's technically the same body.
Yeah, I mean, it's not exactly doing the whole Two-Face riff, but given they're both Batman villains, you know, come on.
Exactly. You take the best of both worlds and you put them together.
The other thing I didn't particularly care for, and I guess it was a little bit more towards the end or whatever, is there was a fair amount of profanity here that just kind of, you know, came a little out of nowhere.
Yeah, that is true. And then I equated that with Black Label, because it seems like ever since they did the nude Bruce Wayne, you know, in the first Batman Black Label comic, it seems like since then, the only thing that you've really kind of seen is maybe some profanity. And I guess that's the only thing that differentiates, is they throw a little bit of cursing in there to make it edgier. But yeah, I agree with you. It just came out of nowhere.
Did it help the story at all?
Not really.
Then why do it?
I don't know. I don't know. Other than to say, if I'm a writer, maybe I come across people in the world, people that I work out with at my gym or people I see at work, who curse sometimes, you know? And so maybe it makes it a little more realistic to that writer if they see people curse in their everyday life. And when everything's sanitized, maybe that's not real to them. That's the only thing I could say.
I get that. And there are certainly people out there who use profanity a lot.
Yeah, so he's going for like a realism type thing is what I was thinking.
Does Batgirl strike you as one of those kinds of people?
No, she's the one who does not strike me as that type.
You know, when they do the thug or whatever, the street guy, and he's doing nothing but profanity and stuff, because, well, that's how they talk on the streets. I think it's a bit of a stereotype, but I get why they've got it.
Yeah.
When they start interjecting this into other characters where it feels out of character.
Yeah.
And granted, this is an alternate version of these characters, etc. I don't know. I took note of it, and rarely do I do that in a good way with profanity.
I agree. And I knew that would probably bug you. So, I mean, when I was reading that, I was like, I think this is something that's going to... But at the same time, that taken out of it, I liked the first book of this, and I did enjoy the issue. But yeah, that's something that's just not what we normally see with that character.
Well, and if they had taken that out, this could have been a bit more, I don't want to say an all-ages book, but open to a wider age range.
Yeah, it could have been a DC proper title.
Well, like the original volume was.
Exactly. Exactly. So I don't know why they decided to go Black Label with this. Maybe to make Black Label relevant, because there's not much coming out other than the Superman thing right now. I don't know.
I personally think DC's messed up their branding pretty severely.
I do, too. And another thing that's kind of weird is the first two Black Label things we had was the Batman thing and the Superman thing. But they're these big, oversized magazine, thick issues. And then this is Black Label, but it's a normal comic book. So I don't know why. I thought maybe all the Black Label stuff would be these oversized magazines, but now it's just some are magazines, some are comics. I don't know what they're doing.
I think the magazine side's generally a bad idea because it doesn't rack as well at the stores.
Very true. You don't see very many magazines other than stuff like The Creeps is one that I get. And I've just gotten a couple issues of it, but it's very rare because hard to rack, and it's not easy to ship, too, if you're buying from a cowabunga comics.
Well, and when you got the rest of your comics in comic boxes and stuff, that stuff doesn't quite fit, you know?
It doesn't.
Just from a logistics point of view, it's got some serious downsides.
I agree.
Overall, though, like I said, the art and story on this were solid. It was good. It's a cohesive universe. I appreciate that. I enjoyed this. I'm looking forward to seeing where it was going, but I'm not going to say I absolutely loved it.
No, I didn't love it, and this one didn't hook me as much as the first one, but I really liked it at the same time, so it's weird. I don't see it living up to the first one, but at the same time, good in its own right.
Yeah, I would agree with all that, but I think the first one got a fairly good reputation early on because it was charting new ground, and it would be hard for any sequel to live up to that.
Very true. Yeah, it's very tough. So, and now they've taken out kind of that aspect of the Joker. You know, now he's gone back to being the Joker that we know, and so that little riff and that little play there is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that takes away some of the punch from the first, you know, book that came out.
It certainly makes it substantially different than the first one in that regard. Absolutely.
Definitely. So that's the biggest thing for me. I was like, the other one hooked me because it's so different. Like, wow, I haven't read this before.
Well, and I think a lot of this hinges on you having read the first.
Yes, because if you didn't, you're going to be like, it'll be good, but you won't understand what the heck we're talking about.
Well, yeah, I mean, you'll get... I mean, it's accessible enough that I don't think you'd be totally lost, but you'd be wondering, you know, why is Nightwing wearing this GCPD, you know, hat, and he seems to have a badge? What's going on with that?
And why is the Joker always angry about this guy named Napier?
Yeah.
Who's Napier? Don't mention that name!
So, again, I don't want them to have to recap the whole first book in this. I don't want a big, you know, previously on kind of a deal either. But I think there are ways that could have been woven into the story to give us the reminders we needed.
Yeah, something. I mean, even if a recap, it wouldn't have had to have been big. It could have been just like a small paragraph just saying this, and, you know, it leads us to here, you know, or a few little flashback memories on a page or two or something.
Something. I think the previously on is a writing crutch, but I would have appreciated a reminder as to where the story had left off.
Yeah, me too.
Overall, though, it was good. I'm going to go with a B- on this. I don't think it's as good as Batman White Knight, but I honestly didn't expect it to be.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. I liked it a little bit more than you. I gave it a B+, and probably because I'm maybe still some leftover excitement from the first one, and I trust the writers that I think it's going to be good, and they have some, you know, twists and turns in there, some things that I want to learn about with the old Arkham stuff, and they brought the detectiving back, so I give it a B+.
That's fair. And I think really the true measure of this, as with the others, is how the whole story works, not just how one of the installments of it plays out.
Exactly. Yeah, that'll be huge.
Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Sounds good.
This is Valkyrie Jane Foster, or Jane Foster Valkyrie. I didn't actually check the indicia to see which that was. and it actually doesn't say in the...
Oh, mine, yeah, Valkyrie Jane Foster. The front page?
Okay.
The bottom?
I'm just not seeing it. My eyes suck.
It's
listed as Valkyrie Jane Foster, but the cover, the logo looks like Jane Foster Valkyrie, hence the confusion, you know?
It does. It does look like that.
Either way, it doesn't matter. We know who the character is. I will point out, because I think I have to, not that it's a big surprise to anyone, I skipped War of the Realms.
Shame on you.
Now, based on Avengers 21 from a couple of weeks ago, I know there was a status change quo for Thor, and he seems happy with it. That's fine and good. But this is my first introduction to the status quo change for Jane Foster.
Yes.
Jason Aaron's doing the writing, so I figured it'd be pretty good. Al Ewing's helping out. Cafu's doing the art, who's a terrific artist.
Yep.
And from the first splash page, I'm like, this is looking pretty good.
Yeah, definitely. Very good art.
So I was happy with what I got here. I'll be honest, I'm not totally sure what powers Jane has as Valkyrie, but the minute I saw those people she was going up against, the Fast Five.
On rollerblades.
Or the wannabe Power Rangers, as I call them.
Yeah, that was pretty horrible.
I don't know what powers they have. I don't know what powers she has. It's her title, though. I'm pretty sure she's going to win, and there's five of them, and the colors aren't that cool, so yeah, they're toast.
Yeah.
I didn't expect one to be as toasted as he got, but, you know, hey, I figured they were in over their heads.
Definitely.
When we got to her weapon, which, man, I can't even really... I don't know how it's supposed to be pronounced. Underjarin, maybe?
Yeah, I don't know how to say those things, but we'll go with that. Underjarin.
Like Mjolnir's easy to pronounce.
Exactly. These Scandinavian names, forget it.
Yeah. The mysterious all weapon.
Exactly.
Taking from that, it can be all weapons? And it seems to be the case.
But it's kind of cool. It gives you as much force as needed. So I guess it gets stronger, more powerful when you're fighting the Mangog, and less powerful when you're fighting rollerbladers.
Yeah, the fact it could be like a mace or other things or whatever and can shift around, kind of cool. And kind of fits what I consider kind of the modern era of ill-defined power sets.
Yes, very ill-defined. Because I did notice... She's still learning her powers, and her eyes kind of turn red, and she had some vision stuff in here. But later on, she has more vision stuff in here. So it's, yeah, she's definitely learning step by step in this book.
And I'm cool with that. I think having characters instantly know everything they could do is unrealistic. Granted, yep. So are the powers, but you know, hey. But there comes a point where the definition of the powers, at least in the writer's mind and how it's communicated to us, the reader, seems to be so loose that they can kind of do whatever they need to when they need to.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, so it's definitely not defined here. All that we know by looking at it, because you can see this on the cover, it's not really a spoiler. She can fly. She has wings. Her name is Valkyrie. And she has a weapon that is a Scandinavian, you know, god weapon, and stuff with her eyes. That's what we know.
I was surprised by the wings.
Yeah.
Because the previous Valkyrie had a Pegasus horse kind of deal.
Yes, and we do have a little hint of something later on.
Yeah, so curious where they're going. I did find the Fast Five not only very Power Rangers-y just in their look and color scheme, but man, when the Silver Ghost is going, you know, anti-invisibility coating on, I'm ghosting. That was both a little awkward and very kind of Power Ranger-y in not the best of ways.
So somebody's a fan of Power Rangers, or... just totally, I don't know, making fun of it. Who knows?
That's my guess.
They're making fun of it.
We know these are better writers than that kind of awkward dialogue. I mean, come on.
Yeah, yeah. That, now, when the one gets away with the sword that everyone's after, because after War of the Realms, there's weapons that are left over, and, you know, the weapons that are used by gods. And
so I'm gathering. I did not actually know that, but yes.
Yeah, so they're running, they're stealing weapons from the Dark Elves and things. So they're after this weapon. It's kind of interesting what happens in the alleyway and, you know, what happens and who that ends up being.
When they gave that of, you know, he's got the sword or whatever, it's like, I didn't know who that was, but looking at it now, knowing how it was revealed, they played fair.
They really did. And that was kind of cool because when you read it the first time, I had no clue. When I got to the end, like you said, I was like, oh, wow, that was definitely fair. They were not tricking us at all.
And at the top of the page, when he trips the guy, he's in the shadow, but it's easy to overlook that at first. But when you look at it, yeah, he's there, you know?
Yeah, and I didn't notice that until the end reveal when I went back and looked at this.
So, again, this is the kind of thing that makes Cafu just a really good artist.
Yeah, he is really good. I really enjoyed it.
One of the other things I enjoy it, but I'll admit to having a little mixed feelings on, is kind of the god speak that she does. She's like, oh crap, I mean, forsooth.
Yeah, that was, yeah, kind of. I don't like too much of the god speak.
If they play it here with, she's doing it as like a secret identity thing, and they play it just a little for laughs, I think it'll work fine.
Yeah, if they do it a lot, it will become annoying.
Yeah, if she can walk the line between doing it to seem a little more godly and disguise the fact that she has a secret identity, but not so much that she's like poking fun at Thor, I'm cool with it.
Yeah, I would agree. I agree with you there. And I like some of her powers because she is, one of the other things that she can do is she can basically appear at the gates to Valhalla instantaneously from anywhere. So she transports there and she can meet with people and seek advice and things like that. But I want to see the play on this because of what happened in War of the Realms with the Valkyrie hordes that were there. And now with her and the status change with that, you know, more on welcoming people into Valhalla and how that plays out going forward.
I do hope we see that kind of thing because I think we should.
Yeah, that, I'm hoping they show that at some point.
I was pleased how accessible this was for me not having read War of the Realms.
Oh, that's cool. I was wondering how you would read to you. For me, it was good. And I kind of see it as like Jason Aaron, he's passing the torches off on different things. He's tying up his King Thor run. And he's kind of co-writing this with Al Ewing and then just passing it off. And he's going to be focusing on Conan, I guess, going forward.
Yeah, but I think he set some stuff up here that was, some of it was kind of interesting. Some of it, it's coincidental. When we meet, what was his name? Rudy Gillespie, the coroner who talks to the dead. I mean, they don't talk back, but, you know, he gets really wrapped up in his work. Clearly, there's a story behind him. He's going to be, it looks like, a major supporting character.
Yep, definitely.
Seems interesting. But what are the odds that Jane would get transferred to the morgue just in time to see which the guy he's working on at the time plays into the main plot line and stuff? And really, what are the odds of the new Valkyrie getting a job in the morgue?
Very true. Yeah, they definitely made that happen.
It's not a problem. I don't object to it. But there's a little, wow, what a coincidence.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree with you there. There's not much that I can say to oppose that opinion because, yeah, it's true. It's a little bit outlandish that that would happen.
Now, I will say that typically the use of Asgardians, and they used quite a bit here, it doesn't always work for me, but it was working here better for me than it usually does over in Thor.
Yes.
And I think for me, part of it is having a human character like Jane Foster as the vantage point, which is making that difference.
I would agree. And there's not too much on the the mythology of the, you know, basically these gods and, you know, the kingdoms and stuff like that. It's a little more grounded than when he got really in depth with the Ten Realms and things. But on the flip side, I'd say a bad example of that is Wonder Woman, where it's gotten really deep into the mythology and stuff, and then that loses me when it gets really, really deep into that.
I think there are ways to get deep into it without feeling like you need to have a PhD in mythology to understand it.
Yeah, and this one's very grounded, so you won't feel that way going into this, I don't think.
Yeah, yeah. And the fact that she is associated with that mythology for, well, really since, I think, the beginning of Thor, but she's still human and is our entry ramp into it, it's helping me a lot.
Me too. So I'm, like, super happy with this book, that it's accessible. You don't need to read War of the Realms. You can go in here and enjoy it. If you're a fan of Jane Foster, who will be Thor in the movies coming forth, I guess, is it going to be Thor 4 or something?
I think Thor Love and Thunder is the title.
Love and Thunder. Okay, yeah. She's going to be the person. This will definitely be a book you want to read.
Yeah, I think it's one worth reading just regardless. I think it's great art, solid story. They're doing some stuff where the characters, again, discovering things about their powers and whatnot. The last page reveal was unexpected, kind of cool.
I think very cool.
They played fair. It was a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to more of this series.
I would agree with you wholeheartedly. I'm totally on board with this, and I really enjoyed myself. And the voices were true for the characters. You know, Jane Foster, who she is, it dealt with the cancer. It talks about her and her abilities and her past and where she is now. So I'm very happy, and I'm glad of how it was made accessible and you didn't have to read War of the Realms.
Yeah, there were a couple of things here and there that having a little, you know, clearer aspect or whatever wouldn't have hurt, but I was fine with how it went. And again, learning the powers as she's doing them, like some of the Vision stuff there at the end, I thought was cool. I want more of that in comics.
Me too. And I want to see more of that, one of the powers, kind of like a Punisher type thing that's going on and with her Vision. I like that.
Actually, a crossover with her and Punisher. I mean, she would be able to track him fairly easily, I would think.
I think so. That would be hilarious.
Yeah, having the right writer do a couple of oddball crossovers with her and some others would be fun.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, I think this was overall a great read.
Yeah, I agree with that entirely. I was a little worried before reading it, thinking, you know, I didn't read War of the Realms. I like the character. Valkyrie's kind of cool, but is it going to work for me? They had, like I said, terrific art and a very accessible, enjoyable story. So even having skipped the event, I was able to get on board with this no problem. So for me, A-.
Oh, cool. That's uncanny. For me, I really enjoyed it. I didn't think it was like the best comic I ever read. There were a few things in there that were kind of silly and I didn't like. But I was like you. I really thought it was a great read. I went with the A- as well.
Cool. That's impressive that he could get both of us, you having read War of the Realms, me not, and both of us enjoyed it equally. That's hard to do.
Yeah, that's a sign of a skilled writer right there.
Yeah, yeah. Shall we move on to our other book?
Sounds good.
This is Star Trek The Q Conflict, number 6 of 6. This wraps up the storyline.
And we reviewed the first one.
We did. Overall, I've been enjoying this series, but I gotta say I felt it could have been a little better.
Okay. And just FYI, I read the first issue and I read the last issue. It was very accessible because I wasn't lost. I'm assuming all the events took place in the middle.
Yeah, stuff happened in the middle. No, it was four issues of blank pages.
Yeah, the competition.
Well, it's funny because this was very much kind of a fun contest of champions sort of a story.
Yeah.
But the downside of that storytelling device is we've got four crews of like 7 characters each, plus the four gods, a couple of secondary characters, and oh yeah, they gotta go do stuff too.
Which, so yeah.
There was a lot going on here, and one or two of the secondary characters they introduced this issue, it's like I had to go look up.
Oh, so you didn't even know who they were?
I couldn't remember.
Okay. And the artist in here had to do a lot of work with doing all these likenesses and all these characters on all these pages.
It's funny you mentioned all these characters on all these pages, because there was one page where we've got a splash at the bottom half of all the characters. Okay, we're going to go fight now.
Yeah.
And it's not all the characters.
Yeah, it's true. It's like half of them.
Actually, it's most of them. They only missed 4.
Oh, 4, okay.
But it seemed to pretty much be one from every team.
Oh, okay.
I
don't know which one's missing.
I think it's Geordi, Scotty, B'Elanna, and Dr. Crusher.
Oh, what happened to them?
I don't know. The fact that most of them are engineers, kind of odd.
Huh.
But, you know, hey, it is what it is.
Maybe he forgot.
I th- think he just ran out of room.
Yeah, because they're packed in there pretty tight. I mean, he could have stuck them in there here and there, but that would have taken away from the view of the weapons.
Yeah, yeah. The mini adventures they've been doing the whole time, again, very much like Contest of Champions, but this issue, I think, is a good example, as were the others, of when you've got that many characters and you're actually trying to have plot progression every issue, there's not a lot of time and space left for the cool character moments I was kind of hoping for.
Yeah, that happens, and that's one of the reasons why when there's large team books, and this is a large cast of characters, everyone has to have their, you know, words in there, you know, their two bits, you know, their little pitch, you know. So every panel, they seem like they're crowded with text, and yet you don't get to know any of them well enough or deep enough that you really care about any of them. And that happens with a lot of team books when there's too many X-Men or there's too many Avengers, when you have word bubbles all over the place. I think, you know, the smaller the cast, sometimes the better.
Yeah, I think for this kind of a thing, what they did was fine and was good. It was a fun miniseries that was a bit more action than character-based.
Yeah.
But I might have enjoyed a bit of a slower-paced story where maybe these crews found themselves trapped on, like, I don't know, a merged ship through some kind of spatial anomaly that they seem to hit all the time in Star Trek. They've got to, like, pool their resources to survive. Something where it's, you know, a little bit of Enterprise, a little bit of Voyager, a little bit of Defiant, a little bit of, well, I guess another Enterprise at that point.
Yeah.
You know, so you've got conflicting technologies and stuff, and you've actually got to have the characters interact and rely on one another.
That would be cool. And learning each other's personalities and how they work together, how they mesh as a team.
Exactly. Which of these engineers could work together, which can't? Who gets along that you wouldn't have expected? Who doesn't?
Yeah, seeing like Data with what's his name? The Vulcan. Dr. Spock.
Data, Spock. Data, Spock, Tuvok, and Odo.
Yeah, seeing how they interact with each other.
Yeah. Troy with Uhura.
Yeah, just seeing how they interact and the personalities, all the different commanders. Who's the dominant of the four?
You know, who's the top of the pecking order? Who's the bottom? How do they team up? Who has similar hobbies or interests? Whatever. Something where we actually get to know them a little bit more, and they get to know each other a little bit more.
Instead, they just kind of mixed the teams, and they isolated them here, here, here. But then they came together at the end, but they were just a big mishmash. You know, you didn't get to see those character moments.
Yeah, there just wasn't the room and the time. And that wasn't what they set out to do here, I think.
Yeah. And I would agree.
What we got was fun. It was just a different take than I might have gone for.
Yeah, it was fun. And the solution to the Q problem was kind of funny because it's like an ultimate nullifier type event, I felt like.
Yeah, and I think they ended the story in a satisfying manner.
Yeah, they did.
If you liked this kind of a thing and you haven't read Contest of Champions, the original one at Marvel, it's a 3-issue miniseries. It's worth doing. If you like that and you like Trek, this is worth checking out. This is not something that I consider to be absolutely essential reading in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I would agree. And you know I'm Star Trek light, and reading just the first issue and the 6th issue, I remember I was like, oh yeah, the first one, I really liked it. I just hadn't pre-ordered it and stuff. I didn't want to have Eric mm-hmm. tracking down too much stuff for me. So I didn't jump on. I was like, oh, I'll pick up the trade. I'm still probably going to pick up the trade of this because I did enjoy it. Just to find out what happened in the middle. But it was enjoyable for a guy who's not too much into Trek, and I did read Contest of Champions. I wouldn't say it's like the ultimate thing, but it was good.
What I enjoyed about the miniseries, as with this, is the writers clearly knew their Trek history.
Yes, they really, really did.
they pulled a lot of stuff in, but not in a way that I felt like I needed to have, again, a PhD in Trek.
Very true.
You know, I had to go look up who Amanda Rogers was, but it was simply because, I mean, I'd seen the episode, but maybe close to 25 years ago.
Yeah, and 25 years, you know, memories forget it.
Yeah, maybe it was 20, whatever. It was a long time ago.
Yeah, I'm still disappointed that we don't have a Trek on TV other than the CBS All Access. I do miss it, and I do think it's a property that could garner a following to basically keep it on the air for a few seasons, you would think.
I go back to the other book we reviewed last week of The Orville.
Yeah, very true.
It's doing Trek as well or better than Trek. Probably better, actually.
Yeah, I really love that show.
So, again, I enjoyed this issue. I thought it was fun. They did okay with the likenesses. I mean, you could tell which character was which. I'm not going to say they, like, totally nailed it, but it was solid art. It told the story well. particularly given just how busy it had to be with this crowd of characters.
Yeah, I would agree. I thought it played out very well for a licensed book, and I'm not usually a licensed fan. It's one of the better licensed books, because there's a lot of stinkers out there. There's a lot that I really don't care for. And this one, I think they did a good job.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a B- on this one.
Haha, me too. B-. So that's literally what I put, B-. And I'm like, the story didn't end like with a bang, but it ended, you know, entertaining.
Yeah, yeah. And finding a good end to this kind of a thing where it's not, you know, all shock and awe or all let down is kind of tough.
Very tough. So, I mean, they did a good job, so I'm not going to complain.
Yeah, yeah. So I actually am all caught up on my reading.
Oh, cool. So did you not have that much then to get caught up on?
I think I read like 47 comics since we last recorded.
Oh, that's not bad. That used to be what you would get every single week.
Yes. Yes, it was.
So get now it. That's like 2 weeks worth of material.
Getting a lot less helps a lot.
Yeah. And you said next week is going to be a really light week.
I think I've only got like 8 or 9 comics coming.
All right. I'll loan you a few. Keep you busy.
Got other stuff to keep me busy. Don't worry.
Well, anything in particular that you really enjoyed?
That's a great question. I thought the second issue of Usagi Yojimbo was much better than the first.
I would agree with you on that.
I think the fact that he actually showed up a lot in there helped.
Yes. And did you read the House of X?
I did.
What did you think of that?
Mixed feelings overall. I thought it was good. I'm not going to say I absolutely loved it. It definitely had some Jonathan Hickman-isms.
Yes, it really did.
And I thought it was positioning the X-Men in a bit more almost militant way.
Yes.
And the whole embassy approach almost sort of a deal. I mean, it's a viable approach. It's not the direction I would have gone with the X-Men.
Oh, okay. I think I'm just a Hickman fanboy because I loved it. I thought it was really cool. Like, it just felt like everything was kind of like so-so with all the X-books I've just been kind of reading. Like, nothing has been really catching me or, you know, sticking with me. Even Wolverine coming back, I'm like, it's okay. I guess the best thing that I've been reading in the X-books was All-New Wolverine, X-23, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
So now this came out, and I feel like I rejuvenated a little bit because it's so different. I really loved it.
I don't know. I don't want the X-Men to be about, yeah, we're taking over the Earth. We're just letting you live here for a bit.
Yeah, and it looks like it may be going down that path. We don't know for sure, but it definitely looks like it.
But that's the problem is it's a time-tested trope for the X-Men.
Yeah.
You know, mutants versus humans, which is going to be dominant and wipe out the other. And then you've got the mutant versus mutant, you know, gang-fighting type stuff they do so often.
Yep.
I'm tired of that.
I can understand. Because it's been done. This is kind of like Avengers versus X-Men type thing, where if it does turn into that type of thing, I could see a clash of the two again. So I'm hoping it doesn't go to that, but we'll see.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, since you left off on War of the Realms and you didn't read any of it, I'm not going to talk about it and spoil it, but one thing, are you going to pick up King Thor, the last 5 books that Jason Aaron's writing in Thor, or no?
I have not pre-ordered them.
Okay. One thing that was really cool, just for me, just so you know, because I know you didn't read it, a lot of the stuff that Jason Aaron wrote, you know, probably 5 or 6 years ago when he first started writing Thor, you know, he would flash forward and show the old Thor, the, you know, young Thor and all that. It all came to fruition. So it wasn't just filler, because stuff that I read 6 years ago is now changed with War of the Realms. So I thought that was really cool. And so it made it feel like everything that he'd been writing mattered. And now that they're making the movie with Jane Foster, I'm like, man, everything he wrote literally mattered. So that would made it really cool.
That is cool.
And it's so rare for that to happen in an event or in comics. So I think he wrote it so well that that's why they're going in the movie route. They're going to use his material. And I've read the Walt Simonson run. I've read Jason Aaron's run. I think this is the definitive run that what we just had.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I've been super happy with it.
I think with the movies, if they hadn't decided to go Jane Foster, they could have done Thunderstrike as well.
They could have, and that would have been very cool too. Now, oh yeah, on the Slack channel, the Goon 5 and 4, did you want to talk about that?
Yeah, Eric mentioned that 5's coming out and 4 hasn't. And I'm curious what's happened. I mean, we may never know, but to me, the options are basically either the wrong issue got to the printer and to Diamond first, which would be bad on the publisher.
Yep.
Or 4 has been floating around Diamond for a little bit, and they got 5 and got that out before 4, which would be bad on Diamond. I suppose the other possibility is they just put the wrong issue number on it, although that seems unlikely. Either way, it does drive me a little bit nuts when they put issues out of order.
Yeah. So I'm guessing it's a publisher because Eric Powell does his own stuff. He has his own publishing company. I wonder if he literally, you know, emailed out or sent the wrong stuff to the printer.
Because, it's entirely possible. It'd be easy enough to get the files mixed up.
I mean, especially running a one-man shop. But, you know, the cool thing is he literally writes those things where I guess you could say it builds on itself, but it really doesn't. They're really one-off stories, so it doesn't matter what order you read them in. It's not really going to affect the story at all.
Yeah. At some point, and I need to do it in the next few months, I need to retool my number crunching a little bit to gracefully handle multiple issues being released simultaneously.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't know if you noticed in the previews that I guess comes out tomorrow as we record this, but we've already got some of the online solicits. Mark Millar is doing another Chrononauts miniseries.
Oh, I like the first one.
All 4 issues get released the same day.
Nice. So how are you going to track that? So if there's a fall off between issues 1, 2, 3, and 4, it's just literally the people are not ordering the issues. It's not because people are dropping off and not reading the title. That's weird.
They're all solicited at the same time. They're all released at the same time. And I can see if I were a retailer, I might consider ordering less of the other ones.
Yeah. Everyone likes a shiny new number one.
But it begs the question, why not just go straight to trade?
Very true. I what is he trying to do by doing that?
I don't know.
Just be Mark Millar. Or Miller.
I thought it was Millar, but I could be wrong.
Millar. I think it's Millar. I don't know why you say his name.
I was thinking they were doing Chrononauts as a Netflix kind of a thing, a show or movie or something. And it may be that he's getting these out to where the trade would then time for when that would air on Netflix.
Or maybe he just got into a mood where it just, you know, he thought it was hilarious that he's going to release issues of comic just like Netflix releases episodes of a TV show. All at once.
That could be, too. I hadn't thought about that. I think you're entirely right on that.
Because he's a funny guy. I could see him doing that and just laughing and saying, isn't it hilarious?
Now you can binge read it.
Exactly. I could see him totally pitching that. I bet you he does.
Yeah, I completely buy into that theory.
Just thinking about that, I was like, I bet you that's what he's doing.
I got to say, I respect the fact that he had all 4 issues done that he could do that.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, it's cool, and I think it's been amazing because when he was doing his own thing, his output was not that large. I mean, he was writing stuff, but it seems like now that he can just be a creator and he's not having to create the books and worry about this and this and this and this, that Netflix has kind of taken over the publishing for him and with Image, he's cranking out so much material, it's just almost breakneck pace.
I think part of it was he was continuing to shop other stuff around and do some movie-type stuff that was eating up some of his time. Because he had a fairly prolific amount of output before, too.
Yeah, but he doesn't have to do that as much anymore. Now we get, almost as soon as the series ends, he has a new one come out. And it just ends up perfectly that when we're looking for a new book, he almost every 5 or 6 months, he has a new series starting up.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is kind of cool. I like it.
We'll have to consider if we do Chrononauts or not, and if so, which issue?
Exactly. Let's start with issue 4.
Or maybe we do that as a back issue spotlight the week after. I don't know.
Yeah, hey, that would be fun.
I did get some good feedback on the back issue spotlight we did on Heroes in Crisis.
Oh, people liked it?
People liked that, and a couple of people suggested we do that for Doomsday Clock and maybe some other events that happen.
Oh, yeah. I'd have to go digging because those go back for 2 years. I don't know where they are in my boxes.
Yes, that would be the challenge with Doomsday Clock.
I'd literally want to wait until I bought a trade.
And that's an option, too. At some point, I think we ought to consider it, though.
Yeah. That would be a good one because what was weird is I would read some of the issues and I'd be like, wow, this is really cool. That was good. I have no clue what happened 5 months ago. I can't remember anything, but that one issue is kind of cool. I'm sure it meant something, but I can't remember.
It's one of those series that I think the individual issues are good reads, but the arc of the whole thing lacking depth and substance.
Yeah, could be. Really could be. And I remember it seemed like a slow burn at the beginning, and then it got better near the end, and we're not even at the end, but the last like couple issues were pretty good.
I think they've all been good. I think they've all been slow, but that's, I'd have to reread to clarify, because it's been, like you said, many millennia since the first one came out.
Yeah, it's like 2 years ago. Forget it. That's not happening. I'm not going to remember.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Cool.
So let's see. There's, I think, one or two other things I read that were kind of cool. I really enjoyed Marvel's Epilogue.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I forgot about that. That was really interesting because I got that big, thick book, and I didn't realize it was just a shorter story with a lot of back material, but it was still really good.
Yeah.
What'd you think of it? You really liked it? Or?
Alex Ross is incredible art, Kurt Busiek, incredible writing. So when those two are together, it's hard to go wrong.
Yeah, I agree.
I think Alex Ross, when he's paired up with either Kurt Busiek, Mark Waid over on Kingdom Come, and I guess it was Paul Dini where he did those tabloid-sized things a decade or so back. And then also the Justice series he did at one point for DC. Hard to go wrong.
I would agree. Those are some top-notch creators. They're at the top of the game.
Yeah, yeah. Love that kind of stuff.
Me too.
But yeah, it was catching up was surprisingly easy this time around. Having cut back, that helped a bit. There were a couple of things didn't work for me too well, but most of it was fine.
And you don't find yourself missing stuff, like now that you've pulled back and, like, let's say you've cut half your list, probably more than half. Do you feel like you're out of touch, or do you feel like you're missing it, or do you feel comfortable?
Well, having read Valkyrie, I kind of am wondering, should I have read War of the Realms?
Okay.
So there's stuff like that, but there's other things where, like, some of the stuff coming up that we're going to review, like with DC, I stepped out of Red Hood, Outlaw, and Green Lantern. So
yeah,
when I hit that annual and that issue of Green Lantern and stuff, maybe I'll think it was a mistake, maybe I won't.
Yeah. Actually, with Green Lantern, I don't think you missed anything. I'm still reading it, and I'm really contemplating dropping it, just because I'm not entertained like I was with the last writer.
What I'm finding is fewer things are getting onto my list, and more things are just kind of winding down.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, if you're not having fun with something, you shouldn't do it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's other stuff I can be spending my time on, other stuff I am spending my time on, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, it makes life nicer and less stressful and more fulfilling.
That's the goal.
Yes.
So, I do want to congratulate Chris Marshall real quickly on 500 episodes of the Collected Comics Library. If you guys haven't been checking that podcast out, it's well worth it. Chris knows just tons of stuff on the trade stuff. He's a really great guy and has been podcasting 12, 13 years now, give or take.
Yeah.
He took a little time off for a while, but he needed to recharge his batteries, so it's all good.
Yeah, I listened to him when he started coming back, because he was gone for a while, and when he brought it back, I've been listening ever since.
Yeah, great guy. Totally support that, and I'm glad he came back and hit 500 episodes. It's a pretty big milestone, I think.
Yeah, congratulations.
And then Previews is out as we record this. That happens tomorrow as you listen to this. It happened last Wednesday. It's that whole time travel thing. Preview Spotlight number 142. The deadline for that is going to be Saturday morning, August 10th.
August 10th. Okay. Have your clips in.
I already got some clips already because we've got one or two people that are just fast on the draw with that, but definitely look forward to getting everybody else's clips.
Cool. And I'll send a reminder on the Slack channel, too, for you guys on the Slack out there.
Cool. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That pretty much does it.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Red Hood Outlaw Annual Number 3 from DC, Powers of X Number 1 from Marvel, and Ice Cream Man Number 13 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.